CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Keely. You're joined by Ryan Abraham and Shotgun Spratling. Shotgun, who's covered in Braves decor, if you will. Congrats, Shotty.
Damn right.
Is game seven tonight, or that already happened? Are we done?
How does it feel to have a successful baseball team? Just asking for friends.
It's very strange to actually be able to finish it off and win the World Series. 26 years in the making.
Crazy.
I can feel the glow coming off of him.
Yeah, right next to him. I know. Yeah. It's stunning. He's
so radiating. Used as an Atlanta sports fan to everything just collapsing. So it was very, very weird when they won in Game 6. It's like, wait a second. How am I supposed to feel now?
It was funny. Know how to be happy? Is that a thing for Atlanta sports
fans? Yeah, kind of like USC fans right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, big Braves fan. He's at practice this week talking to Craig Nivar, who's you know, big Houston Astros fan. Like, both of them were like, no, my team's going to lose. No, your team's going to lose. They were like arguing which team was going to lose. So it was funny.
Yeah, that was funny. But we're back and we have a lot to talk about. We took Sunday off because it was Halloween. I hope you guys had a great Halloween. We have to preview USC's game on Saturday against ASU. Two teams that aren't doing the best right now. They're not trending in the right direction, I would say. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a London-less offense. USC lost Drake London for the season with a fractured ankle. So what does this offense look like without him? Do you lean more on the run game? We'll get into that. And we'll talk about Clay Helton. Maybe you guys remember that name. Not something that you guys said over and over again that he needs to be fired. Well, he got hired this week, so we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about USC's future. Can the team go bowling this season? We'll talk about that. You can tweet at us, hashtag TunnelVision, and I'll put your tweet up on the screen. And wherever you're watching, Facebook, YouTube, or Periscope/Twitter Live, put your comments, questions, concerns, and we'll do our best to answer them as well as we can.
Hit the like button on other things.
Hit the like button, subscribe,
all
that good
stuff. I don't know what they do. They help, or something. Yeah.
Sure, and if you put your question up, we'll put your question up on the screen. We love hearing from you guys, so thanks for doing that. But guys, like I said, USC is heading to Tempe. USC-Arizona is always interesting. I feel like there's always something weird that happens in the game. Ryan, I call you the Pac-12 guru. Mm. What are you expecting on Saturday, and what are you expecting from this ASU team?
Yeah, this Arizona State team. I mean, you have two teams right now that are essentially circling the drain, right? Like USC, they bounced back a little bit against Arizona, but allowing a team that hadn't scored more than 19 all year to score 34. At home, explosive plays, fake punts. Like, it wasn't like USC was buttoned down. You know, they scored 6 points after halftime after Drake London goes down. But you beat Arizona. You gave them from a 19-game losing streak to 20. That's nice. So you did that. So at least you got a win. But the two games before that, not so good. ASU, they couldn't have a bigger turnaround. Like, you looked at this ASU team, you're like, man, the Sun Devils are going to win the Pac-12 South. Just 3 weeks ago, halftime at the Utah game.
Dominating.
They haven't lost in the Pac-12 yet. They're up 21-7 going into halftime, and they collapsed. They just fell apart. Didn't score another point. Over the next two games, 56-0 they were outscored. The first three possessions of the Washington State game, they turned the ball over, then turnover on downs, then missed field goal, then another turnover. Like, it's been an absolute implosion. They were from on top of the world to way on the outside looking in. Utah pretty much has a stranglehold on the division right now. It's a huge fall from grace, and we've talked about this from the very beginning because of the NCAA scandal stuff. I forget what Herm Edwards called it. He didn't call it a scandal. He called it a review or something. Or he didn't call it like sanctions.
Didn't call it an investigation. He
it was
a review.
It was a review. Yeah. You know, they had to suspend three coaches from the beginning of the season, but it was pretty quiet since then. It's a super senior laden team. You got maybe the best quarterback in the conference, Jaden Daniels. They got great running backs and good wide receivers. A lot of seniors coming back and experienced defensive players. People thought this was a team that was going to make a run and win the South, and they looked poised to do that. I was just waiting from the very beginning. I think we talked about the preview show at the beginning of the year. When is that other shoe going to drop? I don't know if it has, but man, ASU has definitely fallen off a cliff. And they just fired their sideline reporter, a former Arizona State safety who made some comments about this team not being well coached on a podcast, and they fired the guy. And I think John Wilner just tweeted, like, that says more about ASU than it does about your sideline reporter, who's a, you know, bleeds Sun Devil football.
Former player.
Yeah, he played football at ASU. So the people are like, oh, USC is in trouble. Like, sure, USC is in trouble, but ASU is in trouble too. What these are, it's like two teams in trouble are going to collide. I don't know who's going to come out on top.
And the crazy thing is, before the season, you look at this game on the schedule and you go, that might be the determining game in the Pac-12 South. And, you know, maybe Utah can do something. We'll see how their transfers do. Maybe UCLA kind of puts it together finally. But you looked at that and you said, those are probably the two most complete teams.
Yeah.
Those are the two teams you feel like you know the most about coming into this season. And that's been far from the truth, because this Arizona State team is not playing well recently. And I feel like it's just been an accumulation. When you have that dark cloud hanging over you, when one thing goes bad, and that's that second half of that Utah game, how do you bounce back from it? Well, if you've had this, you know, lingering black cloud over you the entire time, and you know it's raining on you throughout the season, you know, it's just a sprinkle, it's just a mist, and you're like, okay, is the sun ever going to come out? And you just get worn down by it over and over. You know, you go from being a little precipitation on you to suddenly you're drenched because it's just been constant. And I think it seems like that's been the case for Arizona State. Now, they've also lost some big players. Jermaine Loyal, their big-time defensive lineman, losing him has been a huge issue for them. And that's similar to USC. You know, some big-time injuries have, you know, kind of multiplied some of the issues that they're having, and I think that's going to be the case for USC going forward on their offense, because Drake London was doing so much for that offense.
Yeah.
Not just the catches and, you know, everything that he's doing there as far as moving the ball himself.
This is a decoy.
But just creating so much more for, you know, space, because you have to double team him. You can't play up tight on him. Now I think teams are going to try to probably come up and press USC. Are they going to be able to get behind anyone? They haven't consistently done that with any of the receivers, and, you know, it's going to be a much different look. I think USC, you know, the last couple of games, you go, okay, this is what we figure we're going to get. I think now you look at it and you go, we could get a lot of different looks, because teams are going to play you completely different than how they were playing you when Drake London was on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Shockin, what are you expecting to see from USC's offense this weekend? I mean, I know on Instant you talked about how this is not going to be just one wide receiver stepping up. It's going to have to be a collective effort from USC's receiving core.
Yeah, I think the receiving core, the receivers, the tight ends, the running backs, everyone's going to have to step up a little bit if they want to try to replace Drake London. And I don't know if that's going to happen. You know, this could be like the death knell for this offense. You know, they've struggled. They've moved the ball really well, but then they get in the offense. But you watch the film of some of these games, Drake London just creates so much separation on his own. You know, it's a slant route. You know, you look on the other side, and it's multiple slants being run. You look on the other side, the other guy's covered, you know, white on rice over here. You look at Drake London, he's created 2 yards of separation. And that's just his ability to be explosive, and the threat of him going deep,
yeah.
The threat of him, just how physical he is. You can't get your hands on him, and you know, like you can maybe Taj Washington or Gary Bryant, because they're smaller receivers. So who is going to step up and start creating separation?
Yeah.
Because the job is going to get that much harder for Keaton Slovis and Jackson Dart. Now people go, Keaton Slovis has been locking on Drake London all the whole season. And Jackson Dart even talked about it this week. He's like, well, when you have Drake London over there, you're much more likely to throw it over there.
I might throw it to him.
Yeah, he said, you know, sometimes there's been other guys open, but you think about it and you go, well, if I throw it at Drake London, he might break a tackle, he might break another tackle, and it turns it, you know, short gain into something big, much more than some of the other receivers may do. But they've relied on him because one of the big reasons is because he gets open all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
And when he's not open, he still catches the ball.
Exactly.
You know, if you make the wrong choice, like, oh, he's not open, he'll catch it anyway.
You throw it up, and, you know, if you have one-on-one coverage, that's what you look at, and you go, okay, well, you throw it up, and he'll go get it. And then you look at, in this game, they threw a couple deep balls to Gary Bryant. Now, the one over the middle, this is something I've been asking for a while. Throw that deep post. It stretches the defense. Push those safeties back. But on the outsides, they tried to hit Gary Bryant once, on an outside breaking, like a flag route. Jackson Dart couldn't hit him there. Tried to hit Taj Washington a couple times, not catching the ball. You did get a pass interference one of those times. But there's just no consistent threat on the outside on that deep ball. So that's going to be a big issue for them. So there's going to be some pieces. People are going to have to step up. So what do? Well, you turn to Keontae Ingram. This guy has been a monster the last 2 weeks. He broke, I think he had 7 missed tackles that he forced this last week against Arizona. He had 134 yards. Pretty good game, right? He averaged 4.9 yards. That's pretty solid. That's all after contact.
Yeah.
134 yards after contact, almost 5 yards after contact per carry. That's terrific. And so, you know, if you don't get every single block, and that was the case, you know, some of the runs that he had, decent blocks, and that's really all he needs. He doesn't need a great block every single time, like has been the case at times in the past for USC. You give him a decent block, and he's going to, you know, create something big out of it. And if you can just not create a penalty after giving him a decent block, maybe you get a 66-yard touchdown run, or maybe a 46-yard explosive run, or a 30-yard explosive run. All those were called back.
Yeah. 133 yards of
Dante Ware said 133 called back, and you know he could have been over 300 yards. Yeah. You know, it was just a monster performance against a very bad defense. Arizona's not any good.
Yeah,
they're playing a much better defense this week against Arizona State. Just much more talent, and that's even without Jermaine Loyal in the middle of that defense. So, you know, can they establish the run? Because that's going to make it easier on the quarterbacks, because then they can go play action. It's something they haven't done a ton. Now, with the read option stuff, a lot of that those quick screens are play action. But if they get the run going, that sucks in those linebackers, creates that space in between the linebackers and safeties. Just a lot of things open up a lot more if the run game starts early. And I thought it was interesting, with Drake London still, you know, healthy, they ran the ball for the first time. I don't know if they watched Tunnel Vision last week or what it was.
They can't run the ball.
Yeah, that they hadn't run the ball in their very first play this season, and they did. And they picked up 5 yards, I think, for their first play. And, you know, they were able to have a successful opening drive, much different than the Notre Dame game where they tried to throw it first, sack, and, you know, everything fell apart.
Now, Chuck, in one of the sentences you said quarterbacks, plural, which brings me to the question, what are you expecting to see on Saturday as far as Keaton Slovis and Jackson Dart? We tried to get more info this week. We didn't really get much, and I don't think we were expecting to. I don't think the quarterbacks themselves really knew. I asked Dart, how much do you expect to get used this weekend? And he said, not sure, to be honest with you. We'll have conversations throughout the week about it. What are you expecting to see on Saturday?
Yeah, it seems like so long ago that game happened and so many things have happened this week.
Two quarterbacks? I'm like, what?
I think partially it's because we talked to them on Monday. Obviously, the players, USC did not practice on Tuesday. They moved their schedule up because it was election day across the country. So NCAA mandated that, you know, everyone have that day off, the student athletes. So we talked to them on Monday, and that feels like a long time ago right now. But yeah, they didn't know, and I don't think you would expect them to know at that time. But I don't think that maybe today, maybe now the coaches know, maybe they put it out there. But last week it was Friday night, you know, late Friday night when they're in the hotel, they, you know, talk to each of the quarterbacks, say, hey, this is what we're going to do. And Keaton Slovis had some questions about it, you know, and asked Dante Williams, is it something I'm doing wrong?
Yeah.
You know, and Jackson Dart gets his opportunity, but I didn't like the way they used him. Jackson Dart said, it was asked afterwards, hey, did they tell you not to run? And he was like, kinda, is basically what he said. Paraphrasing here, but he's like, they told me to be smart about it and stuff. He didn't run at all. That's the separator for him from Slovis. They both can throw the ball and be efficient quarterbacks, but what changes when he gets in there and what defense have to really focus on is the fact that he can take off running. And there was a great opportunity. He made a little juke in the pocket, and there's a huge swath of open green grass to run to. But he stood in the pocket and tried to throw a deep ball, and Drake London got like fingertips on it. And they can't neuter him that way. They have to use him. If he's not healthy, don't play him.
Right.
But if he's in there, use him. That's the difference maker. And I think if you do that, then you can do some different things when he's in there. Otherwise, like, you know, we got told dart package.
There was no dart package.
That was dart series, dart, hey, are you going to take over this job? And this is what I know people have said that I love Keaton Slovis.
Why do you love Keaton Slovis?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a Clay Helton love of my life. Not quite that deep, I guess. A deep, dark love, like Clay Helton once said about a recruit. But, you know, the thing I said was Jackson Dart really hadn't earned that starting position. Now with the offense, you know, he had an opportunity to get in there. He did not play as well as Keaton Slovis, even though the pick six, that's a terrible play by Keaton Slovis, got it a bit. But those guys now have to work together. And that was one of the big things on that interception is that Keaton Slovis said after the game, he said, you know, if I was in there, he'd been out for a couple drives before halftime. He had the 2-minute drive before. This was the opening drive of the second half. He said that linebacker had been kind of shading a little bit and started dropping a little bit more towards that outside receiver on that double slant concept that they had. And, you know, he said, I wish I would have, you know, kind of seen that a little bit. And he said he talked to Jackson Dart afterwards.
Yeah.
And Dart said,
he was doing that.
Yeah.
Anthony Pandy, he's really good. He's one of their good players.
And had the pick six. But those two guys are going to have to, they're going to have to rely on each other. And that's a weird dynamic. When you're like, hey, what did you see? Because if it's me and you, Ryan, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that guy was doing that. And I'm like, no, I wasn't. He was going this way.
Right. Hoping trying to make him look bad. Yeah,
I want my starting job, or I want to take over the starting job. But, you know, team sports it's a whole completely different situation.
And it's different because we thought we'd see a Dart package. This was definitely not. This was just basically taking turns. And then you have a starting quarterback who's like, I'm like the preseason Pac-12, you know, first team quarterback. And now you're just putting this other guy in. In a 7-point game in the fourth quarter, you're putting in the backup quarterback, a true freshman. You know, there's going to be guys that are like Dart guys on the offense. There's going to be guys that are Slovis guys. You could have a divide between the team. Certainly, it's not, you know, it could impact the confidence of Akeem Slovis. It probably boosts the confidence of Jackson Dart. They are putting him in there. And then everyone has to deal with no Drake London. So there's a lot of balls in the air, I think, for this offense right now. The one thing you can probably rely on is I don't think Keaton Slovis cares. I mean, Kathy Ingram cares who's handing him the ball. He just wants to get the ball. So you hand him a ball like 25 times, that's probably going to be something that settles everything down. That'll be like the milk of men, like a little Pepto-Bismol for this offense, the upset stomach of this offense. You know, it's like, just let Keontae Ingram just run the ball and everything else will sort of take care of itself.
Does Keely, we need an official ruling. Does that count as a food reference for Ryan there?
I think
it's consumed.
So.
I don't know if it's food.
It's consumed and deals with food.
Yeah,
so
it's
yes,
like helping with the food. You know.
Maybe we'll see.
A little Pepto, yeah.
Yeah, speaking of USC's offense, Alex wanted to know how good is ASU's run pass defense. So what is USC's offense going to see on Saturday?
So Lele's still out. Like
I was pronouncing it incorrectly.
No, that's okay. Whatever. I mean, yeah, and it's spelled different. But so he's out. But they do. I think they bring back the most super seniors like in the conference. Merlin Robertson, someone that you know, USC recruited or maybe didn't recruit
as much.
He's been a stud. You know, Jack Jones. You know him. Chase Lucas is a great quarterback. They have a lot of really good players on defense. I think if you look at some of the stats, I think Washington probably statistically has the best defense, but a lot of that's because their offense is really awful too. Like ASU is probably the most complete team as far as that goes. ASU's mostly ranked second in the conference. This is a legit defense that can do a bunch of different things, and I think USC is going to have, you know, it's going to be a tall task for USC to come out there and score a bunch of points, especially with the mistakes. The problem is both of these teams have made a ton of mistakes. I mean, there's turnovers, there's penalties. I mean, ASU and USC just like over 100 yards a game, double-digit flags a game. But overall, I think this is a really good ASU defense. Just the way we've seen that through. Now they've given up some big plays and stretches, not the kind of the same way that USC has with the explosive plays. But I think it's a legit ASU defense, so it's going to be a real challenge. A lot different than what you saw last weekend in the Coliseum against Arizona.
Ton of experience.
Yes,
one of the most experienced defenses in the Pac-12. And the question now is that defensive front with the loss of Lele and some of those guys. They've had a couple of injuries on that defensive line. So USC, can you attack with the run? Because that's where your strength is going to be. Because going against Chase Lucas, going against Jack Jones with wide receivers that haven't proven that they can be the guy, it is not going to be the strength of USC in this game. Are they going to scheme open some stuff? That hasn't been their strength either. So,
no.
you know, I think you've got to rely on the run game. And it comes down to that offensive line playing. And big question mark, no one's really talking about it, but Cortland Ford came out of the second half. The offense wasn't the same. I know Drake London was out, and the offense completely changed after Drake London. Actually, I had looked at the numbers. USC had 12 runs before Drake London came out and 34 passes. It flipped. After Drake London was injured, they had 13 passes and only 29 runs. And that's including a 2-minute drive right before the half where you pass the, you know, at least 50% of the time, the majority of the time there. So, you know, completely flipped there. And maybe it reminded me a little bit of the Fresno State game when JT Daniels goes down with a knee injury right before halftime. Similar time frame. You know, Drake London was about 4 minutes to go before the half. But in the second half, they just kind of, you know, cocooned up and said, let's hold on to this lead, as much as we can. You know, take time off the clock. They didn't really push the issue much. And I think maybe that was the case you know, because so much of the game plan is based on Drake London, what Drake London does, catching the ball, but also creating space for other people. So maybe they said, let's just run this base stuff. Let's be very simple. Let's run the ball. And they were having success with that with Keontae Ingram. But maybe that was part of it. So maybe they switched the game plan up. It'll be interesting to see what they do this week with so many changes, whether it's, hey, do you implement more of an actual dart package and use him running the ball and do use some different things? And you know, who's going to be featured this week? I think the targets are going to be spread around a little bit more.
Sure.
Obviously, Taj Washington got a couple more targets this game. I think he was targeted 10 times, which is the most he's had this season. 8 catches, the most he's had this season. But him, Gary Bryant, Kyle Ford.
I think Kyle Ford's going to have a big role.
I was going to ask you, Ryan. That's your boy.
That's my boy.
What are you expecting from him?
You know, I got to talk to him on Monday after practice. He had a pretty big scrum around him. And I feel like he's confident. You know, it seems like the health is there. There were some issues where he could have got in games and maybe didn't. It just didn't seem like the way he was brought along. But, you know, he was listed at number 2 at that X receiver spot behind Drake London. There's no more Drake London. They moved him up to the number 1 spot. He seems like he's ready, mentally ready, physically ready to take on that role. And if Keaton Slovis, Jackson Dart have confidence in him, I think they can throw him the ball. I mean, he's 7 catches, 104 yards, and 1 touchdown. Which game was it? He got 1 catch for 1 touchdown. He played 2 plays.
Washington State?
Washington State. 2 plays, 1, you know, he caught a touchdown. The other one was like a kneel down, right? I think he's someone that has confidence. I've seen him. I was watching him at high school at the opening, and it was a weekend 7-on-7 tournament where you're playing, I don't know, 7-8 games, and they're, you know, 15 minutes, 20. Well, they're not that long. You don't get that many opportunities. He caught 15 touchdown passes over that weekend.
It was the best performance anyone had seen.
I've never seen anything like that before. Like, you know he can do this. And he's a bigger guy. Dante Williams talked to this week about he's like a 230-pound guy that runs like he's 205 pounds. I mean, you look at him, there's a thickness to him. You know, like, Drake London has his own athletic ability. He's tall. He's, you know, he can jump and all that stuff. And you look at Kyle Ford, he's definitely built differently, but he's someone that can muscle and push some people around. So he gets on a roll. I think he could be someone that takes over that. I mean, no one's going to take over Drake London's spot, but he can take a bunch of targets away and sort of, you know, you're going to distribute probably more people. But if you're confident you can throw it to this physical wide receiver out there, he's going to make the catch, maybe bowl over a guy or two and get some extra yards. Instantly, I think Slovis and Dart could be like, yeah, I definitely want to throw the ball, you know, his way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could see him blossom. I think he's a guy that we could definitely see blossom. And it'd be great to see after 2 knee injuries. The question, though, is can he create separation? Now, maybe he can use his size and push people out of the way. And if you can get away with that in the Pac-12, which you never know what's going to be. He had a great catch on the sideline coming back for a ball that Keaton Slovis gets outside the pocket. Nice throw from Slovis, putting it outside. He lost 3 yards on the play because the referee doesn't know how to spot the ball. So welcome to the Pac-12. You never know what you're going to get there. But Slovis and Kyle Ford lost 3 or 4 yards because of a terrible spot, which I pointed out on film study, which you guys have to check out this one just because that play in itself is
Pac-12 refs all over it.
I just watched it. I was like, wait a second. What just happened here? He just caught this ball at the 42 or whatever, and it's at the 30, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yikes. Now, Chuck, an interesting development we saw in practice this week was true freshman tight end Lake McCree. I thought he had a good week of practice. Do you anticipate that maybe showing itself in the game in more playing time?
Yeah, he was a dude this week. He made a ton of catches in the one-on-one drills, and I think that what it is we've seen him, and he can make some plays and has some more athleticism, basketball player in high school as well. But I think his confidence, you know, he feels like, okay, I finally arrived. He made his first, he made his debut last week. He made his first catch, and, he was able to get some first and second team reps last week during practice. You start feeling yourself a little bit more like, all right, I'm fitting in here. He's adding a little bit more weight. He's a little bit lean for a tight end right now. He's working on the blocking, but I think he's getting some confidence to himself, and I think that could be a big piece for them because, they need a tight end to step up now. Whether it be Malcolm Epps, whether it be one of the old guys, I call Jude Wolf an old guy, even though I think it's his third year. I think he's technically, may even still be a freshman if he's third year because of the COVID. But Eric Cromanhook, someone has to step up in that room. With Michael Trigg not back and not looking like he's going to be back anytime soon. Haven't seen him at practice this week.
No, Trigg would have been this has been a great opportunity for him.
Yeah, but again, he's a guy that was really benefiting from Drake London because he was getting one-on-one coverages, whereas if he's the only guy out there that you'd see as a playmaker, maybe you keep someone, you keep a linebacker underneath them, a safety over the top, some different things like that. But who's going to step up? Someone needs to, and I think Lake McCree could be a guy that does that, and if his confidence continues to grow, he made a ton of plays this week in practice. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets some opportunities on Saturday. What does he do with those opportunities?
Mm-hmm. We got a question from AKA Boone on YouTube who said, will ASU's defense play the run or have more pass rush knowing Keenan Slovis lost his favorite target?
I think they'd like to dial up pressures. I think you're going to see some of that, but I really feel like USC is going to focus on running the ball, just like Shotgun was talking about in the second half last week. I think they're going to try to run the football more and you know, mix in passes and try to get the wide receivers going without Drake London in there. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what Arizona State's doing, but I feel like you're going to see a team that's going to try to stop the run, but really, you know, pack guys at the line of scrimmage, try to force the action in USC's backfield, if it's going to be the pass rush or just kind of, you know, run blitzes and stop the run, and make USC, if they can't run the ball, hit something deep that somebody besides Drake London.
If I'm Arizona State, I'm stacking the box.
Yeah.
I feel confident in Jack Jones. I feel confident in Chase Lucas. Now the slot area, the tight ends, kind of see how that kind of develops, but I would leave those guys on islands, feel confident in my veteran guys. I mean, Chase Lucas is like 45 years old, I feel like. He's been around for a ton of action at ASU and played a ton during his career. So I would leave those guys out there and force someone from USC, like, all right, let's see if one of these receivers does step up. And they burn them once or twice, then maybe you make an
back
adjustment.
Off,
but, you know, I stack the box and say, you're not going to run, you're not going to do that, and you're going to be one-dimensional in your passing attack and see if USC can do anything there.
Mm-hmm. Now, over on defense, Shotgun, this is something you noticed in your film study. USC's situational awareness, their eyes to kind of diagnose the play, has struggled as of late, and that's something that Todd Orlando ended up talking about in his media availability. How critical will that be when you're playing a guy like Jaden Daniels?
I mean, it's crucial in any circumstance.
Sure.
USC's played a lot of zone coverage the last couple weeks since the bye week. They try to switch some things up, but it's kind of like when a basketball team switches to a zone midway through a season. Like, there's going to be some rough patches. Like, it's not something you do every single day, so it's not going to be your strength. And there's just guys, you know, they're dropping into their coverage area, but they're not noticing, okay, that guy's coming from this side, that guy's coming from this side, and moving with wherever the receivers are. They're just being like, okay, this is my spot. I got to be there. You know, you got to have feel. And I don't think that these players have a great feel in their zone coverage right now. But with Jaden Daniels, one of the things I noted on one play in the final play of the third quarter, Raylan Goforth, the quarterback gets outside. USC doesn't get a bunch of pressure. Quarterback gets outside. Raylan Goforth decides, all right, I'm going to go provide the pressure. And he takes off running after him. And the quarterback's able to dump it right over him to an open receiver.
That's a spot, yeah.
Jaden Daniels is really good at putting pressure on those defenders when he gets outside the pocket and deciding, okay, are you going to try to come and tackle me and try to get a sack? And maybe he makes a guy miss because he has that ability too. If you do that, he's just going to dump the ball over you. But if you back off, you know, he might, you know, take off running and be able to run up the sideline. He had a 38-yard run against USC as a scramble last year. So, you know, he has that ability. And he doesn't make a ton of mistakes. The one thing that the biggest issue, I think, for USC's defense right now is tackling has been a huge issue.
Yes.
But even bigger than that, something that can overcome tackling issues is they're not creating any turnovers.
Yeah.
Remember last year how many turnovers they created? Now, Talano Hufanga was a monster part of that. He had probably half of them himself. But they're not creating turnovers consistently. Now, they've gotten one each, I think, the last 2 weeks. Chris Steele, both times, interception at Notre Dame. He knocked the ball out. But they, you know, last year they were getting some 3 and 4 turnover games, and that's what's been kind of been missing. That can make up for some of the deficiencies that they have. If you get a turnover, that changes the complexion of it, and you know they haven't been able to consistently get those.
What, real quick on that, I asked Dante Williams about that this morning on our Zoom call because, like we mentioned, you know, Washington State comes out, fumble on the second offensive play for ASU, the third offensive play, another fumble, yeah, interception on the next series. And it looked like Washington State was going after the football. Like, it wasn't. And, you know, I asked Dante Williams about that. Like, they had 5 turnovers in that game. Can you use that momentum? Like, they're a team that's reeling. Is that something you can do to kind of keep it going? Like, hey, we don't want them to get right against us. They've been in a tailspin for the last 6 quarters. How do we get it to get, you know, get it in our favor? And he just seemed like it was more about, hey, it was what we do. And I asked him about the turnover part, and he's like, you want to get the ball, but you don't want the first guy to get, you know, the first guy there to punch it out, because then you might miss the tackle and stuff. But that's definitely what Washington State was doing. I'm not sure there's going to be an emphasis on the creating turnover spot, but if there was any way you could do it in practice, I think this would have been the week to do it, because ASU was just on a roll as far as turnovers go. If you can get that going, I mean, you can win the game fairly easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Jaden Daniels is usually a guy that takes care of the ball extremely well. I mean, I think he has the school record for most pass attempts without an interception. I think that was last year, 2019. 2019 as a freshman, I believe it was. Maybe it even overlapped to the 2020 season. But he's done a really good job there. And they don't ask him to do too much because their run game has been pretty successful when they're rolling right. You know, yeah. Their run game has been really good, and that's been the difference for them, because they don't ask him to do too much, and then they can play action. And that's actually the situational awareness that USC has struggled with the most this season, with their linebackers are really attacking downhill, trying to stop the run. Their safeties, when they're playing up in the box, are doing the same thing, and it creates a huge gap. Those guys get a yard away from the line of scrimmage and realize, oh crap, they're throwing the ball, and then they try to retreat, and the safeties are already playing 15 yards deep. So now you got 10 yards of space in between, and there's been a lot of times this season where teams have been able to hit plays over the middle because off of play action, because USC is really attacking downhill and not recognizing the run quick enough.
We had a question from Dakers on YouTube who said, how do we take away ASU's quarterback's mobility?
I mean, Will Plummer's not the most mobile quarterback in the world, and what was it, like a 16-yard touchdown run he had?
That was two terrible attempts at tackling. That's just a terrible play. You can't have that happen. Third and 16 at the goal line, it was third and goal, I think, at the 16.
Yeah, I think it was third and goal.
You go, okay, they're going to kick a field goal regardless. All you got to do is make the tackle. Don't worry about anything else.
You're talking about the five. Let them get
at the
get
one,
11.
It doesn't matter. It was just terrible. Like, and both the linebackers had a great opportunity to tackle him, and neither one of them made it.
So that's the problem. Is like, can USC's defense get this Arizona State offense right by, oh, Jaden Daniels can get what he wants when he takes off and runs, and oh, they're not going to turn the ball over, and oh, suddenly receivers aren't dropping passes anymore, and guys are more open, and you start building confidence. That's the worry. I mean, USC's just given up some huge plays at inopportune times, like the third and goal from the 16. Will Plummer is nowhere near the athlete that Jaden Daniels is. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I haven't really felt confident USC's been able to scheme that kind of stuff, or guys staying home. They got to do something a little bit different. It just seems like whatever they're doing isn't working. I like Todd Orlando a lot, but just something's not working with his defense, and Jaden Daniels is going to be really hard to contain him.
As far as a mobile quarterback, your defensive ends, you just can't rush straight up the field. That was what happened on that play. They actually had a 3-2-6 defense in, so only three down linemen, and both the guys got really wide going to try to get in the backfield and create a sack, and he steps up and is able to run through it. And that's something, you look at Will Plummer, when he's in there, you go, you can do that. Jamari Joyner, when he was in there at the Wildcat quarterback position, like they were kind of rushing a little bit differently. And that's something with Jaden Daniels, they're just not going to attack off the edge, up the field as much. They're going to, you're going to do some different things. You'll do some stunts and come back inside. That was how they got one of the sacks early. Drake Jackson was actually lined up inside. He gets in between the tackle and the guard and creates some separation for Tuli Tuipulotu to come back inside. And Plummer tried to step up and he got drilled. So that's something, you just got to be mindful of those gaps. It's the same thing with a run, when you're fitting a run play, everyone's got their own gap. Same thing for the pass rushers. You can't get outside of your lane and try to do too much. And that's been one of the things that everyone on the team, especially on the defensive side, has talked about, is we can't try to do too much.
Yeah.
Just do your job. Don't worry about doing everyone else's. Don't worry about making the superhero play. Just be Clark Kent.
Mm-hmm. Craig Nivar talks a lot about how the safety position, if you make one mistake, everybody knows. If you make one mistake, it's usually points. We've seen more of a rotation now, and Chris Thompson Jr. is getting healthier. What do you guys anticipate as far as who the safeties we'll see on Saturday?
I mean, we love the way Caleb Bullock's played, like kind of started off early, and then you've kind of seen him come on a little bit later, talk about Chris Thompson. I think there's no need to like, well, here's our guys, we're going to go with these. It didn't seem like anyone's playing all that well. And I think if you get someone that hasn't played as much and they come in and make a big play, you don't want them to come in and do too much and get to the point where they're, you're giving up a big play. But USC's defense has just given up a whole bunch of big plays all season. So I don't mind Craig Nivar kind of moving some pieces around, seeing if there's some strengths. If you see like, hey, he's a little more physical, we can play him near the line of scrimmage. Maybe he helps out stopping a Jaden Daniels from taking off and running. Whatever you got to do. I mean, like we said, it's just not, there's just whatever they're trying on defense just doesn't seem to be working. You can't allow Stanford to score the most points they've ever scored in the season, Oregon State to score the most points, Utah to score the most points, Arizona to score like almost double what they scored all season. You're not doing something right. And so I got to know issues if you're going to mix guys around. You know, Isaiah Pullman is a captain. He would be the first to admit he's not playing as well as he could. And there's no one that's earned a spot there. They're like, oh, you have to. There's no Talanoa Fungus right now. You're like, he has to play no matter what. So if you're going to play some of the new guys, younger guys, whatever, I'm all for that. I mean, just you got to try something different.
Yeah, they're trying to build Isaiah Pullman's confidence back up. That's one of the things that he's gotten kind of gotten in his own head at times this season. And Craig Nivar talked about that first touchdown. He said, you get beat, that's fine, but don't give up the touchdown. We can't give up that. Take the penalty. He was there and he got the penalty, but then he still let the guy catch the ball. Just tackle the guy. If you're already beat, you know, it's early in the game, give them 15 yards and a first down rather than giving up a, what was it, 72-yard touchdown or whatever it was. You know, you just got to understand that's, again, that's situational awareness. Knowing it's better for me to take a 15-yard flag. It's college. It's not the NFL where it's spot of the foul. So take the 15-yard flag and be fine with it rather than giving up an explosive play like that. You know, the safeties, they use five or six different guys last game, and they can use different guys, and they're trying to use them in different ways. And that's the interesting thing with Chris Thompson. He's going to be down in the box more. So when they're expecting runs, you're going to see him down there being kind of an extra linebacker, basically, yeah. You know, being a thicker, more physical guy. Whereas Greg Johnson, if he's healthy, he's going to be out in coverage a little bit more in that spot, at the nickel spot. I thought Zaven Alford played really well last game, and he played really well against Washington State. So when he's had some opportunities outside of the Notre Dame game, because he played terrible in that game, but outside of that game, when he's had opportunities, he's making a ton of tackles. Now, that's not always great for a safety, but the number of plays, like he was in for like 20 plays last game and had four or five tackles.
Yeah.
So he's finding the ball and getting to it and making plays, which is something some of the other safeties haven't done.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of missed tackles in the safety group. And then Kalen Bullock needs to be on the field all the time. That dude, he's a beast.
Yeah.
You know, and he's, we talked about it when he came in. It's like, oh, he's super athletic. He's got to put on some weight.
Yeah.
But
it's a little slight, but
super slight when he came in. He looks different already. Just the look at his calves, and like there are actual calves now. But
poor kid.
His nickname was Sticks. Yeah. But he's so athletic and he reads plays so well, and he's gaining more confidence, I think, because they're giving him more responsibility. Keely and I talked to him after the game and talked about that, you know, just what's kind of been the process of becoming, you know, because the safeties are putting everybody else in place. And he said, yeah, it was a process. He's figuring out, making the calls, understanding where everyone has to be and not just where he has to be. And he would have had an interception if the field was a couple yards wider on Saturday.
Yeah.
Nice leaping grab as he's going out of bounds, try to get the foot down. But he's making a ton of plays. They have to keep him on the field, I think, whether it's at nickel, whether it's at the high safety, wherever. He's the one guy that I feel like needs to be on the field.
Mm-hmm. A couple more preview questions before we jump into user questions, or at least more user questions. If you have a comment or a question, be sure to put them in, and then we'll go into some rapid fire. We got a question from John on Facebook who said, how motivated do you think the team is to play in a bowl game?
You know, I think the Drake London comments about this before were, it probably says most of it, where, you know, they were asked like, hey, you know, you're going to be a first round draft pick. He wants to play in a bowl. You know, he wanted to play in a bowl. Obviously, can't do that now. And you weren't sure, you know, if this team, this team could finish 4-8, right? Like they could lose their next four games. Could theoretically finish 8-4, you know, somewhere in the middle. If it's a 6-6 team or 7-5, you go to the Los Angeles Bowl, the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl, whatever it is. You know, are you motivated? I think they would be. It's going to be weird with the coaching staff because we're not sure what the timing of the new head coach coming in. Would all these guys be on their way out? So it's definitely going to be a weird situation. But from talking to guys, it seems like the players are motivated to want to play in a bowl game. You get the swag bag and all that stuff. I don't think they were like, oh, we don't want to go to a bowl game, at least from what the guys I talked to.
This isn't like a LSU team coming off a national championship and you get 6-6 and you get in the Independence Cure Bowl or something.
Yeah.
This is not the same case. Nobody on this roster barely has been to a bowl game. Maybe Vi and Liam Jimmins. I think they're the only two. I think I don't know if they even played, but I think they were on the team when they played in the Cotton Bowl. But that's how far back it was since USC's won a bowl game. So they want to, you know, get to a game and win a game. So, you know, they haven't really been able to do much. They didn't play last year. There's so many players on this team that are new in the last 2 years, so none of those guys have worn USC colors with the whatever bowl patch on their shoulder. So I think that there's definitely motivation there. And just it would be big for USC's development. Now, there's definitely questions about new coach coming in, but when that happens. But they have so many young players. They need those extra practices.
Yeah. You have 15 bowl practices. Well, yeah. They didn't usually use the 15 bowl practices, but they might now, you know.
Well, also, depending on when a new coach comes in, if a new coach comes in before the bowl game, those 15 practices could be huge. It's like an extra spring to get to know your players, what they can do, and try to establish that culture to begin with. Because we've heard so much about how these coaches and the strength staff try to create a culture, but it's so difficult last year during the COVID stuff, you know, when you're doing Zoom calls trying to create a culture, where if a new staff comes in, you get an extra 15 practices and it makes a second camp that you can have, basically. And if, honestly, that's how I would treat it. Don't even worry about what happens in the game. Don't even worry about game planning, you know, outside of the three or four practices before. Take the first 10 practices and be like, all right, look, this is going to treat this as a winter camp. I know you guys are, your bodies are banged up and stuff, but I know you want to prove that you need to be a starter next year. Then that's what I would do if I was a new coach coming in.
Wow. All right, we got a question from Brian on YouTube who said, will Max Gibbs get more playing time this week? And Orlando actually talked about that. Shotgun.
Max Gibbs is a guy that continues to develop. I talked to Vic Soto about it. I'm looking up his numbers right here. He played six plays in a row at one point, and on that sixth play, you could tell he's gassed. Absolutely gassed. There's no pass rush going on.
He's a large human being.
That's still a concern for him is the conditioning. And I talked to Vic Soto about it, is understanding – you know, more than just one snap, you know, because the first couple times he came in, it's like, all right, you got one job on this one play. You go and you do it as a goal line play, then you're out of the game. Now, when you're multiple plays in a row, are you going to develop and process? How are you processing the information? But everyone was super excited. He made his first play in this past week. He made a tackle and it sounded like there was a turnover.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking and like, because I was actually shooting Max on the play. So I saw him make the tackle as I'm shooting photos. But I was like, wait, did the ball pop free? Because I kind of lost sight. And it was just, no, everyone's super excited because everyone loves Max and what he can bring to the table and, you know, just the gregarious nature that he has. So, you know, I think he's a guy that will continue to develop. But the good thing for USC is they may not have to play him as much. So last week he had 13 defensive snaps. He played some on special teams as well on the kick block unit. But if they get Jamar Sakona back, if they can get Ishmael Sofscher back, you know, if you can get some of those guys back, then that lightens the load on someone. So maybe Max Gibbs doesn't have to go six plays in a row. Maybe he can go three, get somebody else in there for three, keep them fresh. Because late in that third quarter, in particular, and some in the fourth quarter, the defense was gassed. You know, and it's because they're really thin on the defensive line right now with Nick Figueroa being out as well. They're thin there. The linebackers play pretty much every snap. So some of those guys, you could tell that they were gassed. And, you know, going to Arizona State, did they try to push the tempo a little bit after seeing some of that?
Yeah, they're like, these guys are tired. Let's go fast.
Yeah, so, you know, they could kind of try to attack them in different ways. I think Max Gibbs is progressing, which is great to see, and everyone thinks he's going to be a playmaker eventually, whichever side of the ball he's going to be on. But he was in there making some plays, got his first career tackle on Saturday, so that was cool to see.
Good for him.
We got a question about Drake Jackson and Corey Foreman, or a statement. It's Trojan who says, Jackson and Foreman need to play close to the line, let them loose and play football. I think we also got a question earlier that was wondering why Corey Foreman is not getting as much pressure for his body type.
Yeah, I had Harvey Hyde on the show, the podcast on Monday, and he was the same thing. It was just like, you got those two guys as edge rushers, just want them in the backfield causing havoc. And I think the way that USC's just – I don't know what your plan is. Your plan hasn't been working. Like, you know those two guys can get after the quarterback. Just put them out there and let them go. I agree with Jordan Trojan. I don't know what you think, Shotgun.
Corey Foreman did not play in the first half on Saturday. So I asked Vic Soto. You know, he did play in the second half. I said, you know, that was one of the things he's talked about with some of the other guys is getting them into practice. So I led into the Corey Foreman question. I said, okay, well, why didn't he play in the first half? He said he hadn't put pads on all week. And that's a big thing for, in particular for Vic Soto, but for all the defense coaches, for Dante Williams. Dante Williams, you know, makes, you know, if you're injured but you can still dress out, he's going to have you dress out in full pads and, you know, then go to Rehab Island and do your stuff. But if Corey Foreman wasn't in full pads, then why is he going to be ready for the first half of the game? It was interesting they put him in the second half, and part of that reason was Drake Jackson got banged up a little bit. So, you know, they're getting really thin on the defensive line. When Corey Foreman's been in there – he's been able to create some pressure. He got to the quarterback a couple times in this game and got him off his spot. But getting the sacks, that's another, you know, another step in the development for him. And the more opportunities he gets, the more he's going to develop. But he's got to be healthy, and he's got to be locked in during the practice week to earn those reps on Saturday. That's the big thing. Vic Soto is going to make all those guys earn their opportunities. And looking at the playing time of Corey Foreman, you got to go, they don't feel like he's earning them enough.
Yeah. If he hadn't put pads on all week, I get it. You know, there's fans who are like, hey, we got to play him. We got to play him. Like, well, he needs to put the pads on sometime during the week. You know?
Especially because, you know, there's been times when freshmen make mistakes, and he's made some mistakes on, you know, read option plays, and the quarterback gets outside. Well, if you come in, you put him in there, and then Jamari Joyner's the quarterback, and they're in the Wildcat, and they run a read option, and he doesn't play it right because he hasn't been looking at those looks during the week on scout team, and he makes a mistake, everybody's going to be like, why is that guy making a mistake? Why they got him in there? Well, we need him to practice so he can look at and see these things. So it's, you know, it's the give and take there. You want to get those young guys some experience, but he's got to be ready. Now, there's some other positions where I think some of those young guys should be getting some more opportunities, particularly linebacker and getting Rajon Davis in there, because he's a guy that's going to be a stud. They've talked about him in the fall camp and stuff, and he's not a guy that's been in that rotation ever this season. I would love to see him get, hey, if it's one series in a game, you know, down the stretch of this, start getting him just a little bit of playing time, get his feet wet, and give him an opportunity. He is a guy that has been healthy, so that's one that I would like to see, actually.
Why do you think we haven't seen him, Shock? And I know Todd Orlando identified him as a guy. He specifically said not just Corey Foreman, but Rajon Davis. We need to get him ready and potentially see him more by week six. We haven't seen him yet.
If I had an answer, then I probably wouldn't be kind of pushing for him to be in there. I'd be like, oh, this is why he's not doing it with like Corey Foreman. But I don't really understand it. I know a lot of times when coordinator, his position, whatever position he would normally be at, now technically Michael Hutchings is the linebacker coach, but Todd Orlando coaches that group as well. They're that much more harder on the players. You know, we need you to learn this and this and this. But the play at linebacker has not been good enough this season. So why not try someone else in there, get the freshman? Even if he's making mistakes, is he going to make the same mistakes?
It's not like you're like replacing someone that's playing flawlessly. Yeah. Like
you're not replacing all Americans.
No.
Yeah. We had a question from AKA Boone on YouTube who said, will Man Jack or Mike Jack get some playing time on Saturday?
I mean, Man Jack starts the first game and then we like hardly see him since. Right. Michael Jackson, he's talking about Mike Jack. I mean, usually you watch him in camp, you're like, all right, he's definitely going to be a contributor. He's going to play. And like, he's hardly done anything, you know? I think you got to see those guys more now. I think they'll probably be willing to do more of a rotation. Me saying that probably means they're not going to rotate anybody. But like, you would think they're probably going to do that. Now you have London, this big, you know, huge shoes to fill, right? And if you can like rotate some dudes in, but I think you will start to see a little bit more of that. Or they just fall into a thing like, oh, we feel real comfortable with these three guys and no one else plays. I don't think that's the way it should be. It could be. Who knows?
The thing is, we've been saying, oh, they should rotate more at receiver
for like 2 years.
Something like that. Actually, going back to the Juju's days, Juju and Darius Rogers played every single snap. And you're like, can Daquan Hampton not play at all? Yeah. Or what? Like, let him get in there. Isaac Whitney, who went to the NFL and was around for a couple years in the NFL, but couldn't get any playing time at USC. So it's been a question for a while now. But Mike Jack, one of the interesting things, though, is I have him at four games.
He did play. Okay.
So he's played very little, but he's played in four games. And one of them was one snap. The touchdown that Kyle Ford caught at Washington State, Michael Jackson was in on that play. That burns one of his games towards a red shirt. So with four games left in the season, do you look at that? And now it's also an interesting kind of dilemma. If you're on the coaching staff, are you worried about anybody's red shirt?
No.
So
you're probably not going to be back.
Yeah. So you might, you know, if you're, you know, starting a 5-year deal or whatever it may be, you know, you're going to be around for 5 years. You might say, okay, that guy needs to develop. You know, he's probably going to be here next year. Let's not play him. But, you know, do the coaching staff just be like, we don't care about anybody's red shirt and use them because he's at four games right now. Similar, Jackson Dart was asked about red shirt.
Dante Williams talked about this morning a little bit. It seemed like for some players, he was fine with the red shirt. It didn't seem like he cared about Dart's red shirt. He was like, yeah, that's not. I mean, you've got the feeling like he's not trying to preserve Dart's red shirt. Like he can help us win, so we're going to play him, you know?
Yeah, but Michael Jackson would be an interesting one because I have him at four games. USC actually has him at three. And I think the Washington State was the difference, but I confirmed that he was participating on that play. So if he's at four games, do you feel like you want to burn that red shirt to play him? And how much are you going to play him? If he gets
if you think he can contribute, then you got to. But if not, then
he came in. Did you see that he came in last week?
No, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, he played two snaps. but, you know, that counts towards that redshirt count because he had two snaps.
Interesting. We got a question on YouTube from Kevin who says, were you guys surprised that Clay Helton got another job so quickly?
Yeah, we talked about this on the podcast. Make sure you check it out. Dan Weber came back. We had Weber on the Peristyle podcast. It was great. Shaka was sitting here the whole time listening to us, or maybe not listening. He was on his headphones. But a little surprise. So the USC job was the second FBS job to open after UConn. So Edsel, like, they were like, that was a weird thing. But USC fires Clay Helton early on after the Stanford game. But Georgia Southern was the next one. So basically, like, the guy who left the second job, you know, was fired from the second job, took the third job. You know, he's got Jimmy Sexton as an agent. He's a, you know, super agent. He's got all kinds of great deals for everybody. A little shocking that it happened because there's different options, right? Like, you could sit out a while. He's getting paid a crap load of money from USC to not coach anymore. He could have taken, like, a coordinator spot at a Power 5 job. I don't think he was going to get another Power 5 head coaching job because there's places like Texas Tech, TCU open. If he was a candidate for those jobs, I think he would have held out more. The fact that those jobs are open, Texas things again, and he didn't hold out, to me, that's saying, okay, they weren't interested in you for that, which totally makes sense. If you're going to take a Group of Five job, I mean, this is a pretty prestigious job. It was FCS like 7 years ago. They won national championships. But the problem is you're in the Sun Belt. It's really competitive. Coastal Carolina's good. Appalachian State's good. Louisiana's good. And they're a triple option team. And
they were.
Well, I don't know if they are right now. So they're like, they're like 2-6 or something. They're not very good. It's like a rebuild in a small town in Georgia that with an offense that you're not familiar with. He does get a head start. I mean, he can build his staff and all that stuff. It'll be interesting to see any former staff, like a John Baxter or anyone that he used to employ, comes with him. Any guys that are like bottom of the depth chart at USC transfers to Southern Georgia. Like, it's all going to be fun to kind of watch. But I was a little shocked that he took it that quickly. But that just tells me there wasn't going to be really like better opportunities out there. If Jimmy Sexton thought there was going to be better opportunities, I don't think he would have announced for this job really. That's just my take on it.
But you don't usually get fired from a Power 5 job and immediately take another one. Usually it's a step down to either a coordinator or to a Group of Five, and then you try to work your way up. I mean, look at Lane Kiffin or Steve Sarkisian, you know, all these guys that have gone through USC and had to go to Alabama first, or, you know, the number of guys that have gone through Alabama, which is why people are actually surprised. I think some people are like, wait.
Saban must have said no. Yeah, Saban didn't take him. Yeah.
But I think it's a pretty good fit spot for him. This is probably where he should have been his first head coaching job
that's
to begin
with. Yes, this is where his first job should have been.
Yeah. And I think it's very interesting. Georgia Southern has gone on a complete social media campaign, just inundating with everything Clay Helton. So they think they got their man. And now, can he revive that program to where it was as FCS program? No, they're going to win national championships. But that they've tried some different things. They tried to go back to the triple option because that's what they did really well. When they were FCS, Paul Johnson, the former Georgia Tech coach, they tried to get him to come out of retirement, I think, to take the job because he ran the triple option there. They tried to go back to that. Well, does not work at the Power 5 level unless maybe you're Navy or a Naval or Army or something like that. Yeah. But so they're going to Clay Helton. You know, we'll see if there's any USC connections that end up there.
Yeah, there's got to be. There's
that'll
gotta
be interesting.
Whether it's coaches or whether it's some players, you know, we had some questions about does anyone transfer to Georgia Southern? Not out of the realm of possibility. Oh, yeah. With as many people as, you know, really liked Clay Helton when they were being recruited by him and stuff, wouldn't be surprised if they think that there's more playing time there and they think that, you know, they'll be one of his favorites and they'll go and, you know, take that opportunity.
And you can get a new coach that comes in and it's like, everything's buttoned down, disciplined, tough, you know, and someone's like, that's not what I signed up for. I'm going to go back to Clay Helton. You know, I mean, there could be some of that too. So
sure. We got a question from Andrew on YouTube who said, which unit is the biggest liability for USC?
Ooh, that's a good question.
That's a lot of choices.
Sean, I feel like you would know based on film study since you have to watch it so much.
I think the one that pops off the top of my head is the middle of the defense is as a whole, if you want to do that, because the defense nose tackle not having true nose tackle, linebackers, and the safety, the top end safeties behind it. But as a unit, the safeties, and Craig Nivar talked about it, how that, you know, when they don't play well, it's not, oh, they got a first down. It's, oh, they got points. So that's the thing. The safeties haven't played well, which is really disappointing, actually. It's the biggest disappointment of the team, I think, because a ton of talent in that room and just not making enough plays, whether it be missed tackles or letting guys get behind them. If they play well, the defense plays well. And Craig Navarro mentioned that as well. When we play well, we play to our expectations, then the entire defense plays much better. Even without a true nose tackle, with the linebackers not playing great, if the safeties are doing their job and are on top of everything, then the defense would take itself to another level. Now, it wouldn't be up here, but it would go from down here where it's at right now to at least up in the middle.
Yeah, I think for liability-wise, it's probably easy to go safeties because they give up. They can, if they make a mistake, it's a touchdown probably, like you talked about. But, I mean, the lack of production, I would go linebackers. It's just, and it's been surprising to me because, you know, I really felt like Todd Orlando knew they didn't play well last year. This is his unit. They're going to perform. They've just been like a non-factor a lot of the times. And so, but I would still say, I would still agree with the safeties on this one. But, and like, you thought the offensive line might be, they've been fine. Like, they've been, you could say good at times, you know, like, it's been a lot better. I think just having an air raid offensive line coach with an air raid offense works a lot better than a non-air raid offensive line coach and an air raid offense.
Yeah, the offensive line has been good. And if they clean some things up, they could even be great, you know, as far as the units that on this team, you know, not maybe not historically, but, you know, for this team, they could be great because they're opening up some holes and they protected pretty well this season outside of the tackles at times have been shown to be second-year guys and not true tackles maybe even. But they've done some really nice things, and it's changed the dynamic of the game because they can run the ball now.
Yeah.
They can pick up third and shorts. How many times do we say the last 2 years, like, you got to go under center, you got to do something different, but the biggest thing was you got to get a push, and they could never do that, and now they're doing that consistently. Arizona stopped one, a third one.
Short yard, yeah.
What happened? USC got it to fourth and one, you know, immediately. I don't think they've been stopped this year in third and three or shorter in the two downs.
Which is a huge problem last year, or was a huge problem.
Yeah.
And it's funny, if this was a charity golf tournament, like, and they're on your team, the offensive line, they're the high handicap, right? They're the ones, but then they're shooting the lowest score or one of the lowest scores. And when that happens, you're getting all these strokes. Like, it's a big deal. Like, the offensive line you thought was going to be pretty terrible, where you would have said the safeties, you're like, oh yeah, this is going to be a veteran safe secondary group. There you're like scratch golfer. That's like, you know, triple bogeying all over the place. So that's it's a weird one, but you got to give credit to the offensive line. You would have thought that they would have been, you know, a liability, and they haven't been.
And quickly on the linebackers, which you talked about with Orlando, them being his unit, they made some big progress last year too, which is why I think it's been so disappointing. You know, what they were the last three games of the season versus what they were the first three games.
They were better, yeah.
You know, you looked at them and said, that could be a unit that really takes a step forward next year, and that has not been the case.
Mm-hmm. Now, we got this question on the podcast. I'm going to direct it towards you, Shotgun. It's from Alex, who said, would you prefer a young, hungry, rising coach like Dave Aranda or a more seasoned quality coach like James Franklin? Remember, Jim Harbaugh and Chip Kelly were sure bets for UM and UCLA.
I think I know Ryan's answer would be the coach that wins, but that's not that's not that easy, obviously. I really like Aranda and everything he's doing. I don't think it. I think you just got to find the guy that's the best fit, whether it's the old guy, the young guy, you know, just schematically, all those type of things. Who's going to fit best in Los Angeles? Who can recruit well in this area? Who's going to deal with the players that USC gets? This isn't Midwest Iowa folk. You know, it's not yes, sir, no. Like, you know, you're going to get some talk back in the locker room at times. How do you handle that?
Yeah.
I talked with someone recently, and they were talking about one of the previous coaches that USC had, and this person has gone on and done pretty successful in his stops before and after. Didn't do really well at USC, and that was an issue. Just like, you're not used to dealing with someone talking back or going to question you some. You know, you're used to the authoritarian, and what I say goes, that may not work, that fly at USC with some of the kids that you recruit. How do you respond to that? Do you buy into it? Can you go back and forth with them? Pete Carroll, why did he work so well? Because of the energy he had. Because he could connect with every single person in the room. Didn't matter where they're from, what century of history they were from. Pete Carroll could connect with you. And, you know, that I think that's going to be a bigger issue than necessarily young or old. Because I think, you know, Pete Carroll's an old soul. I mean, a young soul, even though he's an older guy. If you had someone with the same resume as Pete Carroll, as far as the things he can do right now, then I think you would go with that versus if you have a disciplinarian that's a young guy that's up and coming. I think it's more fit than age necessarily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've reached the top of the hour, so I'm going to put us into rapid fire mode. So quick answers there, Shoddy. We got a question on YouTube.
These are really quick, aren't they?
Yeah.
For you, sure.
Yeah, fair job. We got a take it or leave it submission, actually, I had to put which that is one up fun. There, yeah. Yes, on YouTube from Tim, who said, take it or leave it. Keontae Ingram rushes for 150 yards. He's on a tear running all over the Irish and the Wildcats. Sorry, no fake sponsor available for this question.
I'm going to take it. Yeah, I think they're going to run him more. I think they're going to try to get him his yards where even if he's not going to, if it's going to be more like a 4 yard per carry kind of thing, I think he'll get enough carries and break a couple and. I'm going to take it. 150 yards for Ingram.
I'm going to leave it.
Oh.
Ooh.
I don't think that they – one, Arizona State I don't think is going to miss as many tackles as Arizona does. And two, I think after seeing Drake London's out, I think the entire game plan is let's shut down 28.
Yeah.
That's a good point. We got a question from Trojan Trojan who said, any update with Michael Trigg?
We saw him on the sideline, or I saw him on the sideline Saturday, in good spirits and stuff, but where's he at in his rehab? We haven't seen him do anything on the field as far as come out and go through anything with a trainer. We haven't seen him on Rehab Island. That tells me he's not. Until he does some of those things, I'm not even looking, you know, he's not even worth asking a question about to the coaches, really, to me.
Jarrett on YouTube says, does the staff believe rotating quarterbacks is best for the offense, or are they afraid to rip off the Band-Aid and benching a preseason All-American?
I don't think Graham Harrell's – I think Graham Harrell likes Slovis. I think him – you know, like you guys say Shotgun loves Slovis. I think Graham Harrell does love Slovis. I think this is more of a Dante – this is my guess, is that more of a Dante Williams thing is like, hey, we need to mix things up a little bit. And – that's why you're seeing more Jackson Dart. I mean, but like Shotgun said, Slovis played better than Dart did in that last game. So, he's a starter for a reason. It's not like you can't just say, oh, we're going to put Dart in and all the problems are going to be fixed. Like, that's just not the case, especially if Dart's not running. He can fix some stuff by running, like bad scheme, but that's more just because he's athletic. And that's, you know, he's in the same offense as Slovis, and we saw them both in the same game against the same team, and Slovis looked a little better. So that's kind of what you expect.
Now, some people didn't want to agree with that statement, that I thought that Slovis played better. If you want to look at the PFF grades, they had Slovis a little bit higher as well. But
like Dart wasn't rated high at all, right?
Yeah, he was towards the bottom. But one of the issues was he had 5 throws over 10 yards. He only completed 1 pass. So the big thing at Washington State was he was able to connect on those deep balls. Didn't necessarily do it against Arizona last week. So that's something that if he's not running, you got to be able to connect on the deep ball. That's his gunslinger mentality. He's going to take some shots downfield, but you got to be able to connect on some of those. So that's why I didn't think he graded out as well this game. That's why I didn't think he played as well. Despite the picks, the pick six is kind of brings Slovis way back down to Dart. But I think that's the danger, though. That type of play where you're not in a rhythm. And I thought it was really interesting what Keaton Slovis said after, and I mentioned earlier in the show, but he said after the game, he said that linebacker was creeping out. And I didn't really notice that because, you know, I'd just come back in. And apparently that was something he had, you know, done. And he said, maybe if I was in, I would have saw that as the drives progress and I don't make that throw. But that's, again, it's going to come back down to those guys are going to have to communicate really well.
Communicate, yeah.
But Harrell seemed like that wasn't an issue. He was like he should have recognized that whether or not he was playing.
I mean, it's true. I looked, there was one play earlier in the game. They run the same concept, double slants. The Pandy comes down on inside receiver. Now, granted, the inside receiver is Drake.
Pandy, I like that.
He comes down on Drake London. So Drake London, again, causes so much more attention. He opens up that window to the backside. And on that play, he just took off running straight out. And I don't know if it was the defensive call and where his zone was that he was supposed to play in, but he did a good job getting his head around and whatnot. But yeah, Slovis has to recognize that better. As a veteran quarterback, you can't make those type of mistakes because it's 6 points going the other way. Usually when you give up a defense touchdown, you lose. That's the difference in playing a team that you're a 21-point favorite over versus like an Arizona State. If they give up a defense touchdown against Arizona State, I'm guessing they lose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that can't happen when you're a third-year guy, and maybe he's pressing. I got to make this play. I got to make because this guy's on my tail. You know, and that's the danger. And I think it's interesting. Clay Helton was a quarterback, and he said, I don't want him ever looking over his shoulder.
Yep.
Dante Williams is a cornerback.
He's like, look over your shoulder, damn it.
Well, cornerbacks, it's all about competition. I want it man-to-man. I want to go against you all the time. and it's not the, you know, and cornerbacks, defensive backs, you get beat, you got to get right back up for the next play. Quarterbacks, you get beat, it can be a game-changing, you know, game changer because the defensive touchdown completely alters everything. So I think it's just an interesting difference in mentality of a former DB versus a former quarterback and how you're dealing with a position that is the position you played or one that you were going against.
Yeah, we definitely wouldn't see this under Helton at all. That's not a very Helton thing to do. We got a question on YouTube from a fellow Ryan. He says, who do you think will win tomorrow night, Stanford or Utah?
I think Utah's going to beat them pretty good. I think Utah's favored by like 7.5 or something, or it's something like that. I think it's gone up a little bit. Utah looks like a legit team. They didn't look as good in the beginning. Cam Rising has come along. He, you know, played really well against USC. He's played well since then. They're running the ball. They had the transfers like Shotgun mentioned earlier. Maybe it didn't work out all that as, you know, the very beginning, but they just seem to be playing really good football right now. And Stanford is still not that good. I mean, they're 3-5. Yes, they beat Oregon, but you know, Oregon didn't have their offensive coordinator. I think Utah's going to take care of business against Stanford.
We got a question on Facebook from Alan who said, it's already November 4th. Do any of you believe USC will announce a new coach before early signing day?
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's a real shot of that, but I feel like they want to get the hire right. But they're, you know, they're keeping everything quiet. You know, kudos to them for doing all that. But yeah, I think ideally you're going to announce it as early as possible, but it might not happen. If it doesn't happen, it's going to be because they're trying to get somebody they can't get on until then.
Mm-hmm. Great answer, but the answer is yes.
Yes. Okay. Sure, Shoddy.
Jesse on YouTube said, how like, important...
Lee Corso. That's great, great. But whoa. Not so fast.
Jesse on YouTube said, how important is it that USC keeps its composure on Saturday? ASU has a lot of guys that love to talk. What's the over-under on unsportsmanlike penalties?
Oh, that's a great question for both sides. Yeah, I mean, this is not going to be the composure bowl, I would say, for everyone involved.
What would be the composure bowl,
Ryan? Well, I mean, like Stanford versus Utah, like they're probably not going to get a lot of penalties and stuff. This is like as loosey-goosey as it's going to get. Like both teams can create a ton of penalties. Trash talk. You got Jack Jones, who used to be at US. I mean, yeah,
like Merlin Robertson, who USC didn't recruit hard.
Exactly. A lot of like Southern California players that play for ASU that maybe USC overlooked. So yeah, there's a huge upside as far as if you're a big fan of the personal foul flags, like you're probably gonna get like 5 or 6.
Who's a big fan?
I don't know. People are like.
Fans. I am. That's why I watch the game of football.
Glasses ref on Twitter. Or
yeah,
something?
He likes that.
Sure.
I think it's interesting. These coaching staffs have gone back and forth, and it's in a fun, playful way. And not so much right now because Chris Hawkins, Prentice Gill are both on paid administrative leave. But those guys have gone back and forth with Gavin and Michael Hutchings and all these guys. Chris Hawkins and Michael Hutchings are best friends. So it just interesting dynamics there. So there's trash talk between them, and they may be kidding, but the players may take it seriously, more seriously. And when you get on the field, you never know what happens. And this game has always been kind of unique. You know, remember 2 years ago, USC goes there. Ooh, this could be a tough game for USC, especially if Vi's not dressed, Stephen Carr's not dressed, or they dressed before the game, then undressed. Yeah. Got out of they warmed up, and that was it. But then USC puts up 28 points at like nothing. 90, someone asked earlier, has Slovis ever led a 90-yard drive? I was like, well, he had a 6-yard throw to Amon-Ra St. Brown against Arizona State the last time they played in Tempe. So, yes. but, you know, it was very interesting. That game, USC jumps out this huge lead. Slovis gets injured. Suddenly the team doesn't do anything offensively and has to grind it out. And, you know, Christian Rector, I think, got a sack or an interception
tip interception.
Yeah, at the very end to lock it up when it was hotly contested after jumping out. It was like 28-6 or 28-7.
Yeah.
And special teams gave up a terrible play in that first quarter. As was the case normally.
Yes.
Now, Augustine on Facebook wanted to know, it's basically a simple question, but could be oversimplified. He said, is the main problem coaching or the players?
Sure. I mean, like, there's not like main problem. Like, there's major problems in the university itself, the athletic department. And it's not just like today. It's not like, well, they didn't practice all that hard on Monday because they took Tuesday off because of the, like, no, this is years in the making. Like, this is why was Pat Hayden such a terrible athletic director and the decisions he made? And then Lynn Swann, even worse after him and the decisions he made. And that's led you to the point where you fired three head coaches in a row in the middle of a season. Like, that's unprecedented. You never see something like that happen. This one, after two games, you're going to have a 10-game interim head coach, maybe a bowl game. There's going to be a lot of weird stuff going on. You know, like you put your best recruiter as the head coach. So Todd Orlando's his boss, and now it's flipped. And there's just so much crap that's been going on. Some of the players, too, I mean, they're probably not playing as well. They're not developing as well. But there's just, I think, mostly the adults around this football program, not today, over the last several years, have failed them. There have been bad decisions made from the president all the way down through the athletic department. Clay Helton, the coaches he was hiring, the decisions that were all made on all that stuff, how you recruited. It's a huge thing that's just been going on for years. That's why you have to burn it to the ground and start fresh with a new head coach. So I'm not going to like nitpick and say, well, this player did this. Like, this has been a systematic problem for years because it's been so poorly run from the top to the bottom in the athletic department, even the president of the university, all that stuff. So bring in someone that's good at their job, hire a new head coach. He takes care of it, clears everything out, and starts fresh. And hopefully you can get things rolling in the next year or so. And I think that's what they'll do.
I think the answer is, instead of players or coaching, is culture. I think that's culture, answering sure. all, saying sure. all the things that you just said in a much more fluid way. But culture is the big issue for USC. And I think that's locker room. I think it's coaching staff. I think it's administration, athletic department, everything above it. And that's what you just talked about, the history and how that's led up to this. I think that's much more of an issue than being able to point and say, yeah, the coaching's not great right now. Or, hey, the players just aren't as good as they used to be. I think there's some issues there, but I think it all stems from something else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We got a question from Trojan Trojan on YouTube who said, will Dante give the okay for Dart to run?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's like I was saying with Shotgun, if he's not going to run, I'd rather just see Keaton Slovis play the whole time. Now I'm going to get accused of being a Slovis lover or whatever, but yeah, I mean, that's something that he adds that USC doesn't have, and I get it. If you're going to put him in the game and he can take off and do that and give you a spark, you know, if not, probably just keep your three-year starter in there. So I don't know. I kind of, my gut is that you're going to see him run a little bit more this week, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
What's interesting is that he didn't take it off at all last week, but Dante Williams said at the Notre Dame game, he warmed up and whatnot, and was told that he's 80 to 85%. He said, okay, we're not going to risk his long-term health. So would they have put him in last week if he wasn't healthy? I don't know. That seems like they wouldn't, but the fact that he was told not to run, and maybe it's just he was told, hey, make sure you're getting down, make sure you're doing all these things, yeah. And he took it a little bit too far and was like, oh, I shouldn't run at all. And they got to coach him up a little bit. Like, where's the, you know, the happy medium in
run,
there?
Just be smart about it. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
So maybe that's, you know, maybe it's loss of communication. He did find out the night before that, hey, you're going to go play tomorrow. Okay. But don't, let's be careful with the running.
I mean, communication has not been great. No. You know, that's more of the bad decisions that have been made from the adults. And really, like, you guys are on the field. Like, even when it's just Keaton Slovis playing, it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of talk going on. Like, he comes off the field and maybe it's an interception and he's just sort of by himself. Like, there doesn't seem to be a lot. Now you have two guys. You really need them to be talking the whole time to, like, figure, hey, this is what I saw, this is what you saw. I don't think communication was good even when you were using one quarterback.
So you can't actually see, at least from the press box, and I don't think the cameras have ever actually shown them, but, you know, they have the telephones. They have a big box. It's like a, you know, like a NASCAR Craftsman toolbox. It's huge. And they go behind it and they have the telephone in there and they'll talk to the people on the booth. So I've seen some cornerbacks on the phone when Dante Williams was up in the booth. I've seen Isaac Taylor Stewart.
You know, like tablets and stuff like that.
Yeah. So you see something, and that's kind of, it's just kind of behind it. It's almost like a screen basically because of this giant box. So I don't know if you guys see that in the press box or if they show it in the broadcast very often, but they are communicating with people up in the booth about those type of things. But the communication, you know, that's the biggest thing is whether or not Dart should start eventually. I think he needs to earn it. But if you start, if USC is not moving the ball well and you decide Dart needs to be the guy, I think one of the things is because the locker room will rally around him more than it will Keaton Slovis.
Yeah.
It's just obvious on the sideline. When Dart does something, everyone's hyped up. when Keaton Slovis does something, it's kind of be expected.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just expectation versus freshman, but you feel like there's, you know, just, you know, and I think that's going to end up creating a divide the longer they keep going with a two-quarterback system, is that you're going to have the dark guys, you're going to have the Slovis guys, and, you know, where does the team go from there? I mean, they're already at 500. I think they're going to stay at a 500 until they figure out, you know, just give one of the guy or the other guy the job. Unless you, if you're going to use a dart package, and that would be the smartest way to do it, where he's running, where he's doing different, where there's different play calls with him in there.
Yeah.
That's the best way to use them. But if you're just going to put him in for series, if you're already willing to give him some series, eventually you're just going to hand him over the job. Yeah. So, you know, you might as well just pull the Band-Aid off and go with it. And that's not going to help Slovis's draft stock. It's not going to do these other things. It may not help the team. I don't think the team will be as good with Dart starting and teams game planning for him versus Slovis, especially without Drake London. I don't think either the offense is going to struggle without Drake London.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, Dart threw two touchdown passes. Both were to London. Slovis's two were to Gary Bryant, right? Like,
yeah, one of them was a 60-yard bomb, and the other one was a flag route to the corner. The other darts were both throw it to Drake London 2 yards at a field.
Right, yeah.
And people will look at that stat line and go, oh, he threw two touchdowns. But, you know, it's a little bit deceptive when you look at it just that way.
Mm-hmm. A.K.A. Boone said, who's more likely to wind up in the CFP, Oregon or Cincinnati?
I mean, Oregon's four. Cincinnati's not going to lose, but I feel like if Cincinnati wins out and Oregon doesn't, it doesn't necessarily mean Cincinnati is going to get in. I think there's a lot of ways Cincinnati cannot. So I would go Oregon at this point, but it's not going to be an easy for them, but they're not going to play anyone. Anyone they play like in the championships game is going to have at least like four losses. So they're not going to get a huge boost, but I think they're going to be more likely to go because of that win over Ohio State than Cincinnati.
I'm going to take Cincinnati because I think they have a better chance of winning out.
They definitely do.
Now, will that even get them in?
Right.
Who knows?
That's what I'm saying.
But
like they can win out and not
I'm
going
to say that I think they are more set up to win out than Oregon is. Oregon just hasn't played well several times this season. So I feel like someone's going to get them. And then that win at Ohio State doesn't matter anymore. Once you get two losses, it doesn't matter who you beat.
All right, let's get a couple more questions in, and then we'll wrap this show up and get some predictions. Trojan Trojan said, will Drake London still travel with the team for morale purposes? He's a team captain, a leader, and the heart of this team.
I would think he probably will.
Yeah. They've done that stuff like that in the past.
Yeah.
But the one of the questions was, I believe I read somewhere that he was supposed to have surgery today. Hopefully everything went great for him. Mm-hmm. We wish him the best of luck in his recovery.
But if that's the case, then it might be tough to go.
Yeah, he may not travel this week, but maybe available to travel next week or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Aaron said, what is the biggest problem with SC's offense? Turnovers, efficiency in the red zone, ?
I would say that, efficiency in the red zone.
Yeah.
Because they move the ball well.
Yeah, it's the whole empty calorie thing, right? That's just a lot of yards, not a lot of points, so
and did they put up,
punch it in.
They did put up 537 yards this game and 41 points, which is not terrible. So,
right.
But 6 points after the half. They scored on five. It had five touchdowns their first six drives. And you go, this is what it's supposed to look like against a bad team. Then the second half, you go, what in the hell just happened to that team that played in the first half? And part of it is Drake London being injured.
Mm-hmm. We got a question from Coley White who said, Keeley's an Angels fan. I am. Shotgun's team is the Braves. What about Ryan? My guess is the Toledo Mudhens. Winning guess wins ice cream.
Well, I'm not a huge baseball dude anymore. That's who I grew up playing, like Shotgun did, but just kind of got out of it. But I grew up in the Pittsburgh era, Pittsburgh Pirates. So Steelers, Pirates, and Penguins are like been my main teams. But I've adopted the LA teams. Like, I'll root for whoever's out here. I cheered for her Angels and back in the day.
We don't need your cheers, Ryan. No. We also got a couple Braves questions, Chuckan. One, how did you celebrate the win? And two, T-Mac says, nice Braves jersey. When is your basketball preseason preview coming out?
When I can finish all the football content. And part of the reason why I haven't gotten to everything is because the Braves were playing.
There you go.
And that trip to Houston last week to go to a World Series game. But I celebrated by drinking a little Pepe Van Winkle. Good stuff.
I saw a
social media post. It was like, oh.
The special occasion stuff. And that's
the stuff we were
occasion.
Looking for. We were looking for that in Chicago. We couldn't find it when we got back.
Well, if you were buying Pappy, we would have found it somewhere.
Okay. We couldn't find any place open. It was
Andrew says, does SC have the firepower to outscore ASU?
Sure. Yeah, they got Keontae Ingram. I mean, I don't think that ASU's got tremendous firepower on the offensive side. So
I mean, both teams have talent and capability, but they both screw up a lot. So just screw up less than the other team, you'll probably be fine.
John on Facebook wanted to know, why is Ryan wearing a maroon shirt during ASU week?
I mean, I don't like
that. That requires Ryan thinking in advance, John.
It's not happening.
And Ryan just does not do that.
But isn't this like Cardinal? It's like this. Like it's like what
it's,
UFC.
It's maroon.
It's more maroon. It's maroon. Oh, sorry. I mean, I just have a bunch of 247 shirts. I got like pink ones. I got all kinds of like two colors. I like wearing them.
I would think that's like Oklahoma colors, but also I'm colorblind, so
that's true.
We got a funny comment from Mark Watkins, who's back. He hadn't watched for a week or months, but he's back, and he said, "Shotgun, when is the oil painting of Keaton Slovis coming out?
Is this a Wedding Crasher style, just hanging over the in the bedroom?"
Welcome back, Mark. Thanks for that.
Yeah,
it's funny
to have you back.
So Notre Dame, like that trip's really cold, and I bought some new 247 gear like recently, and I was going to throw this. Oh, I got a new sweatshirt. I was going to throw it in. It's like completely green. So I was like, I can't wear this crap. Like, so I did think of that one at least.
Well done, Ryan. Proud of you. Alrighty, gentlemen. How do you think this one's going to go on Saturday? A 7:30 kick, which is late, but I'm glad my shoes are not going to melt in the Arizona heat.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's more University of Arizona.
Late one. Sure. I feel like this is going to be like I think Arizona State's probably going to win, but it's going to be close. There's been a lot of close ones in this one. I think it's like 31-28, something like that. I'm going to take USC in the points in this one. It's like 8.5 point spread. Yeah, which I don't usually pick USC in a lot of these situations, but Arizona State is really circling the drain too. Like both teams are in rough shape right now. Which one is going to make the least mistakes? But I feel like it'll be somewhat close. 8.5 points is just a lot in this one because, I mean, USC could come out and win by 14. I wouldn't be surprised. Or they go there and just Arizona State gets right and USC just looks awful and gets blown off the field. But I feel it's going to be close, so give me the points, but I'll take Arizona State in a close one.
Don't say that. They'll get mad at you.
No. Keely said that earlier, too. I didn't go there.
I got no effing clue, to be honest.
I love that. I mean, really.
Because there's so, like you said, there's so much going on outside of the X's and O's.
It was just fire their sideline reporter.
Weird. But that doesn't impact the team.
Well,
really.
It shows you like what's going on. Like there's some weird crap going on. That's what you're caring about. That we're going to fire our former player who's talking about the game on the radio on the sideline. Like, this is where we're going to put our effort in.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
It would essentially be the equivalent of USC firing Max Brown or Sua Cravens from the stuff they do.
You said Stanford was butt, and how did that score end up?
Yeah, but Stanford's 3-5.
But what I'm saying what the team is coming into the game against USC. It's like a weird bubble once they play USC. It doesn't matter.
At home, like USC's been better on the road.
But Stanford is butt as a team, as far as X's and O's. The outside stuff, that's what they can control and what David Shaw's always been good at. So I think that's the difference in that analogy right there or comparison. I don't know what to expect, and I'm really curious to see what they try to do on offense. What can be successful? Can they get Keontae Ingram going? I think I would take Arizona State because I don't know if USC can create turnovers. That's when they've really struggled. They've turned the ball over a ton, and I don't know that USC is going to be able to do that. And with them being much more one-dimensional without Drake London, unless someone steps up, and that's a possibility. I mean, Kyle Ford was a 5-star guy.
Yeah.
You know, a ton of the other receivers are 4-star guys. Taj Washington can be electric with the ball in his hands. Gary Bryant can get behind defenses. But are they going to do any of those things?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, the thing is, there's all that weird stuff that could happen. But Shotgun's right. Like, this offense could – USC's offense could come out and fall flat on its face. Like, without Drake London for a whole game, it could just be like, oh, my God, this is putrid. Like, right? I think there's a real chance that that's not. But there's a chance that it is, where it's just like, man, it's not working. They can't run the ball. No one else is stepping up. So, yeah, if you're going to take Arizona State, you're thinking like, yeah, they're just not going to do anything without Drake London.
And if Arizona State can slow the running game down, it puts even more pressure on the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And are these quarterbacks playing loose and free right now? No, not in a two-quarterback system where you're trying to beat out the other guy the whole time. So, you know, especially if they can't get the run going early, could be a really long night for USC.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. I think Keontae Ingram, for USC to win or be close, Ingram has to have a big game.
Mm-hmm. And someone pointed out that Arizona is giving up 136, 138 yards per game. Okay. Some of those teams have, you know, multiple weapons. And USC, you know, right now they have one proven weapon.
Yeah, I think I'm actually going to go with the ASU win because Shotgun convinced me into it. I think without Drake London, I just don't know what to expect from this offense. And then Jayden Daniels plus a running attack? I don't know. I do not know what to expect from this team. So
this is why I always try to make Keely go first in anything she asks.
Okay, I would have said that if you didn't go. I was trying to give you credit for making good points. Sure. I put a poll in the comments. Will USC win on Saturday? 41 votes are in. 39% said yes. 61% said no. So that's what the commenters are feeling.
Oh, so man, y'all are feeling like Atlanta sports fans. I like you guys. Just feel like something's going to fall apart.
I mean, they've watched the season. All righty. Any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we wrap this one up?
We're heading to Tempe tomorrow. Should we go to the game or just go to Mill Ave and like have some drinks? Like, whatever.
No, all right.
We're going to go to the game. And I'm going to stay with a buddy, do some golfing. It's going to be, you know, we've got a lot. It's a late day.
I didn't ask for your itinerary, Ryan. I was asking any final thoughts.
This is, yeah. So my final thoughts are we're going to go to Tempe tomorrow.
Okay, and,
like,
nice.
Really not know what to expect. Like, honestly, we're going to go into this game and be like, I don't know. Like, one team could look terrible. Both teams could look terrible. One team could look – they could both look great. I just don't know. It's the Pac-12. It's just like you go from week to week, and you're like, these results don't make sense because I've seen these teams play before. And this – how did this happen? Or what's going on here? Yeah, so I'm really curious to see what happens in this one. Late game, always weird stuff happens in this one. So I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. Shoddy.
My final thought is I talked to Elijah Winston yesterday. He's one of my favorite people to talk to. Just a very thoughtful young man. So if you get a chance, check that out on YouTube. You know, check out that interview there. But he's great, and great to see him back after he had a broken ankle last year that cost him his entire season. Had some turf toe issues before that. You know, he was playing in 2019 with the previous staff, and then it's been basically, you know, a year and a half, 2 years since he's really been on the field. Got his opportunity last week. So looking forward to seeing what he can do the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Alrighty, that's going to wrap it up for today's show. We'll be back on Sunday to break down what we saw in Tempe on Saturday, so be sure to stay tuned for that. But that's going to wrap it up. That's Shotgun. That's Ryan. I'm Keely. We'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.